It's a 4th and 32 play, by the way. Not that you'd have a lot of those, but
threw it a 25 yards short sideways of the sticks. Pass. I mean, yeah.
That's Matt Canada special.
Is that supposed to be some kind of hook and ladder thing? Or I mean,
I think that's the only thing you could surmise from that.
Surprised he didn't run Najee there.
Yeah. You said run him on the goal line. Yeah, theirs!
Yeah. Wrong goal line.
Randy Bauman and the DVE Morning Show.
It is the DVE Morning Show. We got a packed house for you today. Today's show is absolutely jam-packed. I'll tell you about it in just a second. Val is off this week. I'll be doing some news for you. Let's take a look at the weather. It's pretty cold out there right now.
Arbonne Severe Weather Center 11.
24 degrees right now with the wind chill about 18, so it's definitely
chilly.
It's chilly out there.
Get your coat out.
And it's very COVID-y out there. COVID case numbers continue to be closely watched by public health officials in western Pennsylvania and around the state. On Monday, Allegheny County reported 807 new coronavirus cases, and Westmoreland County, 344 cases. Pennsylvania Department of Health reported 5,600 new cases statewide. We had 2,100 over the weekend.
Man. Yeah, it's everywhere. And almost all of my family has it. I mean, it's just crazy.
Get your boosters.
Mm-hmm. And if you're getting your booster, like, make sure that you buckle down until it takes effect.
Takes like a week or so.
A week or a week and a half.
Because that's the big deal. Yeah, people think they got the booster and they're like, oh, I'm back to 90% protection. And it's not the case right away. Takes a little bit. Like the first one took 2 weeks
mm-hmm.
to kick in. This one takes a week or so. Western Pennsylvania Republicans now have one less choice in the race for the party's primary nomination for U.S. Senate. Sean Parnell abruptly left the race on Monday after it was revealed that his estranged wife has been awarded primary custody of the couple's three children. In his decision, the presiding judge said that he had concluded that Parnell had committed some acts of abuse in the past. Parnell denies those allegations in a statement. Parnell said that he strongly disagrees with the judge's ruling and that he cannot wage a campaign for Senate while asking the court to reconsider. Yeah, his wife testified that he had abused her and their kids while they were married.
Yeah, I mean, if you can't maintain custody of your children, you probably shouldn't be in office.
The president and the first lady, Jill Biden, are getting ready for the holidays. The first lady accepted the official White House Christmas tree outside the White House on Monday. She was joined by the D.C. Army National Guard family. The large tree was placed on a horse-drawn carriage for a short trip up the White House driveway that runs along the North Lawn. Oh, that's nice. Is it from Indiana, Pennsylvania again? Remember, the tree used to always come from Indiana, PA.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I don't know. Some legendary guitar players, played by some legendary musicians, are going to new homes. Not guitar players. Guitars, not guitar players.
Guitars.
That didn't make sense.
That would be weird. That'd be so expensive.
A lot of just...
buy a person.
You just adopted Slash. Julian's Auctions Mammoth Icons and Idols event over the weekend sold several guitars, including ones played by Eddie Van Halen, The Edge, David Gilmour, Eric Clapton. The guitar that brought in the most money during the event was Clapton's 1968 Martin D45. Ooh, those are beautiful. Which sold for $625,000. Additionally, Edge's stage played 1976 Gibson Explorer went for $437,000. Really?
Wow. That's a lot for The Edge.
For The Edge. The Edge Lord. Today's a big day for musicians because the 2022 Grammy nominations will be revealed. The nominees will be revealed in a live stream event from the Grammy Museum in Los Angeles. It will air on the official Grammy website starting at 9 a.m. Pacific time and 12 p.m. Eastern.
Does it seem weird now, like music and music award shows are not as big? Like, I just feel like the way that music is consumed now through the streaming services, mm-hmm. like there can be several different categories where I've heard of none of the artists.
Yes.
And that was never the case growing up. Even if it wasn't a genre of music that I cared about at all, I knew the stars.
Yeah, it's just, I think that the acts, it is so disparate now because of streaming, and there's just so many different people who find their niche celebrity and audiences, you know, it used to be mainstream or nothing, and now there's like codicils all over the place. YouTube stars, you know, people who come up through TikTok, YouTube. Like Morgan Whalen was a TikTok guy, right?
I think so, yeah.
You know, so
it's where I saw him the first time.
Probably a lot of different avenues these days that sort of bring together very small fan bases. I told you, man, I watched Saturday Night Live the last 2 weeks and I didn't know who the host was. I'm like, I don't even know the host anymore. This is getting bad. New York's so-called Obit Bandit is being sentenced. Latonia Stewart was sentenced to at least 11 years in prison for robbing six different families while they were at funerals.
Oh.
A prosecutor read statements from various victims who said as they were mourning family members, Stewart stole money, sentimental items, and more. Officials said Stewart would read local obituaries online, then use a sledgehammer and break into homes. Stewart is currently facing additional charges in Connecticut, where she's charged with doing the exact same thing.
Wow. What a dirtbag.
Dirtbag. And last but not least, a drug trafficker is being outsmarted by a dog. More than 4 pounds of meth was found hidden inside a shipment of diapers. Was going from Texas to Australia, but made a stop in Cincinnati. That's where a drug dog sniffed it out. A Customs and Border Protection spokesman says they knew the drugs were bound for a private residence and that information has been passed on to the Australian authorities. So, yeah, look, the drug dogs are going to win every time.
They're really good at what they do.
Remember that story Ralphie May had about the drug dog that came up to him and he was in the airport in Hawaii? Hey, how are you? He starts petting it. The dog's just like pointing at him.
This guy.
Come get this guy. Packed house, as I said, on the show today. Charlie Batch will be on with us at 6:45. The Common Heart, 7:20. Gene Steratore will be on 7:45. Frank Caliendo, 8 o'clock. Cam Hayward, 8:45. Billy Gardell, 9 a.m. hour.
Whoa.
Just absolutely slamming.
What a lineup.
Today on the DBE Morning Show. Michael, have your sports coming up at the bottom of the hour. I didn't watch 1 second of Monday Night Football last night.
I watched a little bit of it. I watched a little bit of the Manning cast. I think I'm done with that.
Are you over the cutesiness of it all?
Yeah. Eli's so funny. I mean, he said some funny stuff last night. But the interviews are bad. I don't know why the two of them are in separate locations. Because it's a little bit like we're now in a different spot. We're not in, you know, full-blown pandemic. Uh-huh. And it's back to the squares where there's the delay. Every guest they have on,
yeah,
it's talking over each other and people not understanding, or there's some sort of delayed reaction or glitch in their video feed, and it's not good.
Yeah, that's never good. I mean, it's like when we first started doing the show remotely. It was just
it was brutal.
Total cluster, you know what. All right. The Allman Brothers from E to Peach, Blue Sky, Dickie Betts at his best there. Randy Bauman in the DVE Morning
so
Show.
Good.
Packed house for you today, as I mentioned earlier. Charlie Batch will be on the program, 6:45, The Common Heart. We're doing a special 3-day residency here on the DVE Morning Show with The Common Heart. Joe and
Love
I went
it.
To their recording sessions at the Church Recording Studio in Overbrook. They're recording their new record with Los Lobos' Steve Berlin producing. And Joe and I got to go and hang out with them. We recorded a few songs, and we're running them virtually leading up to Thanksgiving, leading up to that Friday night show at Mr. Small's. That's their big show of the year, and it's a fundraiser, too. We'll tell you a little bit more about it later. Gene Steratore, Zebra Talk, coming up 7:45. Frank Caliendo, he'll be in town December 2nd. That is only like 10 days from now.
Hard to believe.
You can get your tickets at frankonstage.com. Frank will be on the show 8 o'clock. Cam Hayward, 8:45. Another monster game for Cam and lots to talk about, even though the Steelers lost.
A little bit of controversy.
A little bit. We'll talk with Cam about that 8:45. And Billy Gardell in the 9 o'clock hour. Mike Sports next.
DVE Sports.
Mike Pursuta with your sports now on the DVE Morning Show.
Sports is now brought to you by Bridgeville Appliance. Tristan Jarry's shutout streak finally came to an end last night in Winnipeg, but the Penguins' winning streak did not. The Pens improved that run to 3. consecutive games with a 3-1 win over the Jets. Winnipeg opened the scoring midway through the first period, but the Penguins got a game-tying goal from Jason Zucker in the second, and then they saved their best period for the last period. Danton Heinen at 3:33 of the third, and then Jake Guentzel into an empty net to wrap up a 3-1 victory, of which head coach Mike Sullivan approved.
Well, we were real pleased. You know, we thought our assessment was the same as yours. We got better as the game went on. You know, one of the things we talked about after the second period was the third one being our best. And, you know, I don't think, you know, we got on our heels a little bit in the first period. Give them credit. They come out hard on their toes, and they're a talented team. But I thought we did a pretty good job just grabbing a hold of ourselves, trying to turn the momentum a little bit, just simplifying the game. And, you know, as I said to the players, I thought in the first period we weren't as heavy on the puck. The puck battles were we needed to be more determined, and I thought the players responded really well. We competed hard in the last 40 minutes, and the third, I think, was our best.
Penguins also killed two more power plays, or the penalty kill went 2-for-2, I should say, and that runs that unit's streak to 12 in a row over the last four games. Penguins entered action last night, leading the NHL in penalty killing at 89.1%. So all of a sudden, things starting to fall back into place for the Pens. Jason Zucker got the tying goal at 14:29 of the second period, and talked afterward about how the Pens' third consecutive victory looked a lot like the previous two.
Other than the first period tonight, I thought we played three solid games. You know, it kind of took us a little bit to get our legs going tonight, but Jars made some really big saves for us to keep us in that game early, which was good. But overall, I mean, I think it's the the battle level we had, the urgency we had throughout the entire trip, I thought was really good. And I think we stayed with it for 60 minutes for every game, which was huge for us.
8-6-4 now on the season. That's good for fifth in the Metropolitan Division. And don't look now, but back in the second wild card spot. It's amazing how you win two or three games and it can change dramatically. Pens were down near the bottom of the Eastern Conference. Now they're 20 points. Have them currently in the playoff picture. And one of the great nights of the year coming up. A Wednesday night home game before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Against the Leafs?
Traditional.
Vancouver.
It's always fun when those Toronto fans flood the city.
They've been playing that home game the night before Thanksgiving for a long time, way more often than not. And my stepson and his wife are coming up for Thanksgiving. We're all going to the game. And
that's a good one.
Really looking forward to that.
Oh, yeah. Those are good times.
Kind of gets you in the old holiday spirit.
Well, the crowds are always awesome because it's always a lot of people from out of town coming back to Pittsburgh. So it's a Super Bowl for them.
Yep. Big reunion.
Mm-hmm.
A few drinks are had.
A few.
Merriment.
Oh, yeah.
Revelry.
Yes. All of them.
Getting
yes.
the spirits.
Did we sign them?
Merriment and Revelry. Yeah, they're going to be the fourth defensive
pair. Came up from the Iron League.
In case they have any injuries, I'll put those two guys out there. Monday Night Football last night, Tampa Bay gets it done 30-10 over the New York Football Giants. And say this about the Buccaneers, they really don't give a crap about running the football. We might be obsessed with it here. Tom Brady threw it 46 times, completed 30, 307 passing yards, two touchdowns and an interception. Buccaneers ran it 27 times. Danny Dimes, 23-for-38, 167. One touchdown and two picks, and Saquon Barkley, 6 carries for 25 yards. Remember when Saquon Barkley was good?
I mean, I believe it was just last week.
Giants fall to 3-7. The Buccaneers improved to 7-3. Did a deeper dive into the Steelers 41-37 loss to the Chargers on Sunday night, and when I wanted to hit this hour, the quarterback runs by Justin Herbert, because I don't know if you guys picked up on, I was a little irked by that yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And they pretty much what I thought, they just gave it to him. It was interesting because Cam Hayward talked after the game about his belief that Herbert saw something what the Steelers were doing, and he exploited it. I think what he saw was there were going to be lanes. Their rush was not disciplined, and I think he was conscious of that going in.
and if it was there, he was going to take it. He ran the ball the first offensive snap for the Chargers. Isaiah Bugs fell down on a four-man rush. It was, you know, there you go. Take what you can get right up the middle. Couple of times, Alex Highsmith got too deep. He got behind the quarterback.
He does that.
When that happens, a sharp quarterback is just going to step up, and if he doesn't want to throw it, there's an exit lane. There's a door. Go over here. There used to be a guy there. Now he's not there anymore. So take what you can get. He took off. One time the Steelers blitzed, and both Devin Bush and Delonte Scott beat their guys, but Scott was the edge guy on the left side, and he ran into Devin Bush's gap. That was the only time that Herbert ran that he didn't want to run initially. You know, he was evading rush at that point, not just taking advantage of a lane. Not that those other ones were designed runs, but, you know, that it kind of opened up for him every other time, and he took off. This time he started kind of running for his life, and he got to the right edge, and, oh, there's nobody here. I'll keep going. One time Taco Charlton and Cam Hayward ran a stunt, and Cam kind of came off of it a little flat. You know, he started inside, Charlton outside, and they switched. And Cam was kind of up the field instead of at an angle. And, again, the whole outside was left wide open. And Derek Tusker got too deep and said, go ahead, why don't you just step up and run inside me? Because when I get 2-3 feet behind you, I can't really do anything.
Hmm.
I don't know why they do that. There's nothing you can – the next time somebody gets a sack where they run – 4 or 5 yards past the quarterback and then turn around and catch him from behind because he's still standing there, let me know. Because guys just don't do that anymore. They don't hold the ball. Everybody's got a clock in their head. And they got to clean that up. They got to clean that up because guess what? It's on tape now, and they're going to play a lot of quarterbacks the rest of the way that will love to do the same thing.
Joe Burrow will do it.
Lamar Jackson will definitely do it. When we saw Burrow the first time, it was early in the season, I think the second or third game. He had not been running as much because he was still kind of recently off the knee surgery.
Right.
I haven't seen the Bengals since then, but I'm going to watch their game against the Raiders today. I bet he's a little more
agile.
Yeah. Probably feeling it.
Probably.
Feeling himself a little more than he was at the start of the
year. When he first came into the league, he was definitely, that was a threat.
Oh, and he did that at LSU.
Yeah.
You can't be a jabroni and not play the right way.
You can't. And that's what kind of honked me off about the game, too. I wasn't expecting Charlton and Tuska and those replacement guys to get sacks. You know, you're not going to be T.J. Watt. You're not going to come in and be a two-time All-Pro. But you can play the right way. You can at least stop that from happening. You follow me?
Of course.
Trey Norwood's not going to be Minka Fitzpatrick. He's going to be slower to react, and stuff's going to go bad on the back end. The corners aren't going to cover as well as Joe Hayden because they're not Joe Hayden. But you can play as a pass rusher, and okay, I didn't get the sack, but at least I kept him in the pocket and kind of dictated instead of letting the guy just run down the field, the amount of times they did that.
Oh, the real estate was endless.
He knew when they were in man, and he took off when they were in man. And the rest of the defense is all chasing receivers. They're running away from him. Just giving them first downs, giving them yards. They weren't good enough with what they had to stop them anyway. They just made it too easy.
All right, well, we'll talk to Cam about that coming up at 8:45. More with Charlie Batch when we come back. I don't think Charlie Batch is a big fan of Matt Canada. You won't want to miss Charlie Batch. That's next. Your radio home of the Pittsburgh Steelers, 102.5 DVE. Joining us right now from the Pittsburgh Steeler Radio Network post-game show, Charlie Batch. Charlie, what's up, Chuck?
Good morning, fellas. How are you?
I'm doing okay. All right, let's get right to the nitty-gritty. Now, the defense struggled Sunday night against the Chargers in large part due to injuries, lack of starters out there. We were on second and third options and a lot of really key positions. But that notwithstanding, the offense is the thing that really pissed me off. And it's because of Matt Canada. We still score 37 points. But the inability to learn from their mistakes in the past, especially around the goal line, ended up costing them. In the end, had they been able to convert in the first quarter, they would have ended up winning the game. Why is he so reluctant to just do the simple thing on the goal line, Charlie?
I don't know, and I think a lot of that comes down to ego because
you know, last week he ended up throwing the ball three times on the goal line. And now, you know, all week he heard about, hey, you need to run the football. And then at that point, overthinking himself, I'm going to run it twice and I'm going to throw it on another time. And then you come up with that lame shovel pass that everybody in the country is saying, what the heck was that?
Brutal.
And it just gets frustrating to the point that we cannot just turn around and hand the football off and control that line of scrimmage. And that's something right now that we've seen it. We're already 10 weeks in the season. I don't know how that gets any better at this point, but it just gets to the point where it's frustrating, because looking at this team, we should be able to at least just turn around and hand it off, and that's not happening.
Matt Canada was getting pretty universally dragged on Twitter, but I know that you and Stan were up to the wee hours doing the postgame show on Sunday night, and I'm always curious what the tone of Steeler Nation is after a game like that. What was the most common gripe after Chargers 41, Steelers 37, Chuck?
A lot of it was just fire Matt Canada. And we need to replace him.
I was calling frequently, Bill.
It's like, but okay, if you fire him, who's going to be your replacement?
No, they don't think that part.
And that's the issue. And they're like, well, maybe Mike Sullivan. How about you? And I'm like, no, it's not me. I'm not doing that. So it just gets to the point where people are frustrated from that. And I understand it, because I've been the proponent of, you know, why are you cutting half the field off when you're motioning a receiver to the one side of the field and it cuts off half the field? I don't like that particular offense. And you can see us lagging. Yes, it works at time, but you're not able to score. And those type of things are just frustrating. And then all of a sudden, when you get to the fourth quarter, you're down. Guess what? Now Ben is running a no huddle, hurry up type of offense, and you're now putting points on the board. Why not do that consistently right now? And I think egos just need to be set aside by Matt Canada mainly to say, listen, allow Ben Roethlisberger the opportunity to check the play at the line of scrimmage, get him into the right play. And right now, that's not happening. And I've been talking about it for months, and you can see it unfold as the game goes on now that we're halfway through the season already.
You've seen that look on Ben's face before.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me what words he was conveying when he looked at the sidelines.
He's looking at it and he's saying, right now I have to score 7 points every single time, because I cannot depend on my defense to go out there and make a stop, especially when they're leaking in the run game in the manner that they are. The defensive line for the Steelers are lacking in depth. Cam Hayward is now just doing everything he possibly can and running out of gas. And man, I don't know how much more we can ask from Cam Hayward at this point, but Ben Roethlisberger is looking, he's saying, if I don't go down and score, there's no guarantee that we're going to win. So now we're almost asking him, like we've done throughout his entire career, put on your cape, let's go, Superman, go out here and get us a victory whatever way you can.
How much leeway do you give the defense for what they allowed, especially from Justin Herbert running, given the injuries? Should that still have been way better, even with third and fourth string and guys we never heard of in there?
Well, I think a lot of it comes down to that spy rusher that you have. And T.J. Watt typically is that guy. He can rush and knowing when to peel off to now, you know, be able to now stop the running quarterback and the mobile quarterback. You don't have that at this point. We're already leaking. You can't ask Taco Charlton to do that particular aspect of the game because he's still learning the defense. So it is huge when you have somebody like T.J. Watt out that's not allowing you to be flexible in that sense. So it just gets frustrating, because right now this team has always prided themselves on the depth at each position. That's why the next man up mentality was created, and that lets you know how strong of a team that you truly have. Right now they don't have that next man up mentality.
They
they could talk about it, but they don't have that physical presence right now to be able to step in, plug and play, and be able to get out of stadiums with a victory.
Charlie, I don't know how you felt about this, but to me, the feel that I got late in that game was that if the Steelers found a way to win, that might have just broken apart the Chargers season, because that would have been their third loss out of four games or whatever it was. And to give up 27 points against a team who struggled to score 27 points in a whole game in the fourth quarter would have been a monumental collapse that I don't know if you come back from.
Absolutely. And I would have put them, you know, two games behind the Chiefs at that point. So that pretty much would have eliminated them from the division title. You can you get that victory. You have one up on them in the wild card race as it relates to 5, 6, and 7. Now it's just those things. And now the Steelers have put themselves in the clutter of everybody else when you don't win these games over the last 2 weeks that they should have won. Now, when you look at what's up next, This team has 3 games in 11 days, and people say 3 games in 11 days. If you count game day on against the Bengals, 7 days later they're playing the Ravens, and then 4 days later they're playing the Vikings. This is a tough stretch, and if this team thinks that they're going to be playoff contenders, they have to win a minimum of 2 of the next 3 games, especially in the division at this point. And if they don't do that, man, we'll probably be watching January football on TV, and our Steelers won't be in it.
Charlie, why does Chase Claypool always fall down when he catches the ball?
I don't know. That's a tough question. I mean, it seems like he does, and I'm just like, wow, you know, he's so
like
strong.
He dives backwards. He dives backwards.
He does, and I think that's just maybe trying to do too much when it happens. I'm just not sure, because I thought I played receiver before, but I don't have the physical attributes that Chase Claypool has at this point. So it's really hard for me to say what I should do physically in that situation. But looking at it, I totally agree with you. Yes, he should always be falling forward. He should always be breaking those tackles and getting those yards after the catch. And right now, that's just not something consistently that we're seeing from Chase Claypool.
Well, they got the Bengals this Sunday, and Charlie will be on the post game with Stan Saverin. What do you have planned for the Thanksgiving holiday with the Batch Foundation?
Well, we don't typically do Thanksgiving. We host while I'm at our house. We typically have about 50 people, if not more. So my wife,
50,
she
50. Actually cooked.
Yeah, it's high, you know, being that in pre-pandemic, we were as high as 75. But my wife loves cooking, you know, the people who come over, because one thing we never want anybody to do, if they don't have a place to eat, we want to make sure we provide that. Because one thing we don't want to do is turn around on Friday morning and say, hey, what did you have for Thanksgiving? They're like, I didn't have nowhere to go. We ordered pizza. You know, like, no, that's not going to happen. No, I don't care if you
acceptable.
Don't. I don't care if you don't want to sit with my family, and that's okay. But we do provide to-go boxes that you can come in, say hello, keep it moving so you can go home and eat on your couch. We always want to be that resource for somebody. So that's essentially it for Thanksgiving. But, of course, during our holiday drive, we actually collect for our Batch of Toy program over 8,000 toys unwrapped. So, you know, we adopt over 160 families this year. So this is going to be exciting. And if anybody wants to be a part of it, they can go to batchfoundation.org. You can see all the drop-off locations around the city. And we've even made it convenient for you. If you cannot make it to a physical location, there are links on our site that way you will be able to shop, click, and it will be sent directly to our foundation office. So we try to make it as easy as possible. So thank you, everyone, who have been a part of what we're looking to do, is putting smiles on families' holiday during this holiday time. So we should thank everybody who is a part of it, and we truly appreciate everyone.
Well, Chuck, that's outstanding, man, as always. And, you know, you may want to make one of those to-go boxes of Turkey Day food for Matt Canada, because I don't think anybody's going to want to eat with him.
Well, either way, if people could come over and we could just chop it up and figure out why we're watching the Lions at 0-9-1 on Thanksgiving. So that's going to be a tough one. So I think at that point, probably around 10:30, 11, you'll probably see a lot more people playing turkey bowls out there, because there's nothing to get excited about for a 12:30 game.
Yeah, enjoy watching your old Lions. I'm sure you hated playing on Thanksgiving back when you were the quarterback for the Wayne Fonts-led Lions in those days.
Hey, it was always good. But remember, 23 years ago, I was that quarterback on the other side of Thanksgiving when the Steelers played in that coin flip game.
I know, Phil Luckett.
I still have to remember that. And now I can say this in four more years later, I can say, you want to know what? While I'm talking to you all, I can say, it's been 27 years. So I'm excited to have that conversation with you all 4 years from now, fellas.
Charlie Batch on the DVE Morning Show. Thanks, Chuck.
Appreciate it.